At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
If needlework is your passion, whether you're stitching by hand, machine, or mixing it all up, you're going to want to hear about the Mr. X Stitch Contemporary Needlework Prize 2025. This prize celebrates the best in modern stitch and it's open to creatives from all around the world, whether you're a student or an emerging artist or a seasoned professional. And the best part, you don't have to send your work anywhere. Just upload high-resolution images to a private folder we will send you after you enter. You can enter more than one category, for instance, hand embroidery and 3D textiles. Just grab an entry for each one. And if you've got a student ID, you can get 50% off the entry price as well. The deadline for entering is 30th of June 2025, and entries are now open at xstitchmag.com/prize-entry. Thanks to our brilliant sponsors, Bookmarked Hub by Search Press and David and Charles, and the legends at Lowry Workstands. You've got the stitch bug. This is your time. Show us what you've got. Enter the prize now. Visit xstitchmag.com/prize-entry to get your ticket today. Peter Fredrickson is a Chicago-based machine embroidery artist whose cartoonish scenes depict moments of tension and terror. I love Peter's work. I've loved it since the moment I saw it. His ability to capture the Looney Tunes vibe through his free machine embroidery pieces is unparalleled. Somehow Peter has carved himself this niche with this work in which he takes moments. You see, the thing with cartoons is they're violent, but we don't clock how violent they are. And what Peter does is he suspends moments in time, moments of tension, the moment where a door bulges, the moment where knives are flying through the air. He captures these moments with his machine embroidered pieces and gives us pause for thought, gives us time to consider how dangerous these moments are. It's awesome work. It's such a great style. The way Peter does his work, the way his work has evolved over a relatively short space of time, the power, the passion, the humour that goes into his work. I was looking forward to talking with Peter the minute we set this up, and he does not disappoint. So I think you're going to enjoy this first part of our needle exchange. I'll say no more. Go and find him on Instagram if you don't know what I'm talking about. But if you understand cartoons at all, if you've ever had that kind of like Bugs Bunny, Wile E. Coyote, that kind of territory, you know, you'll understand what we talk about, and I think you're going to enjoy it. Thanks for listening to the show. If you do enjoy the show, please share this show with one other person who you think will enjoy it. That would be appreciated. And I'll see you next week for the second part of our chat. Enjoy the show. This morning, I got up and I went to a spin class. And then, when I was reflecting through some of your more recent Instagram posts, I noticed that you've been on a kind of spin class of late. Let's talk about that.
Let's talk about spinning. Let's talk about motion. First, congratulations, spin class. Like, that's just, you know, like, we can't let that go by. You're getting the badge.
Do you want to know my secret of a spin class is, right? Because you can adjust the friction, the tension on the bike. If you want to look like you're working really hard, you have to bob your shoulders more. Doesn't matter what you're doing with your legs, but if you bob your shoulders and you frown, like, it really looks like you're going at it.
Really, it's the frown. Bobbing, yes, no question. But, like, when you're frowning, that's hard work. That's exactly what that is.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah, talk to me about... So you're trying to capture the laws of motion physics.
So I'm going to start way back first and then come back to this.
The
imagery that I draw inspiration from, the imagery that I utilize and use and steal, is all, it's, you know, cartoon. It's cartoon inspired and it's cartoon, like, direct reference, and it's all, I you know, forgive me if I'm over explaining here, but
no, do it.
Good. It's all Warner Brothers cartoons, so it's Looney Tunes, and it is, you know, honestly a little bit of Batman the Animated Series from the 90s, but nice. just here and there. So this is just what I've been drawn to. It's what I've, and I can explain more of that in a bit, The idea is that I wanted to kind of, everything that I've done previously, everything that I've been doing the last, call it 5 years or so, has really, it's been kind of like snippets in time. It's been very like still, but also like action points or surrounding action points. So, you know, it's the moment before somebody steps on a banana peel, or it's the morning, or the moment before somebody, like, you know, like a bomb goes off or something like that.
Or the bulging, you know, of a door, that kind of thing.
Or the, yep, exactly. It's the moment before somebody breaks through a door. Like, it's those kinds of moments. And I kind of wanted to see what it would be like to show the moment, like the, like, you know, the moment where like the slap lands and a character spins around in a circle because it was, it struck them so, so successfully, you know? So it very much about like showing the action as opposed to showing what is building to the action. It's kind of almost a release. So, yeah, I've been doing these motion blurs, and everybody knows, like, you know, if people are listening to this, I hope they do, but if anybody is hearing this and they don't know what the fuck I'm talking about, they do. Like, you know, it's any character spinning around, and you get that blurry cyclone look, you know? It's
you can think Tasmanian Devil would be the easiest one to choose, wouldn't it?
It's perfect. I haven't done a Taz yet, but that's the perfect example. Yes, yeah. So that kind of, well, it's a blur. It's a blur. That's what it ends up being.
But trying to then recreate that in layers of free machine motion embroidery is it's taking some time, right?
I have been playing around with this idea for a while. Probably a good, you know, 6 months or so. Actually, it could be longer than that. I've wanted to do it for longer, but I've been figuring out how to do it. And I think I finally found the process. But it is just, it's a lot of layering. I've started doing versions of these that are, so it, usually I stitch, if I'm stitching an image, it's a rectangular image of some sort, and the whole piece is solid stitching. I have started accepting and employing some negative space, so I'm utilizing the fabric that is that I'm stitching into a little bit more. It started as a time-saving measure, to be honest, and I just kind of liked the way that it looked the couple times that I did it. And so now I'm trying to do these spins, these, you know, this motion blur, utilizing the naked canvas or linen or whatever it is that I'm using. And I found that it is not a cost, it is not a time-saving measure at all. It takes longer almost because I don't have the ability to correct in the same way. If I'm stitching a spin kind of motion blur mass, an abstraction onto like a background that I've already stitched, I know that I can replace colors. I know that I can replicate sections. I know that if I need to fill in some space from this spin because I added too much and it looks blocky or it looks fake, then I can. I can go back and I can remove by adding. It's a, you know, addition, subtraction by addition. With just the nude linen, you can't do that, so you really just have to be very meticulous. And, well, anyway, I'm figuring this out. It's a process, but yeah, it's a lot of layering, it's a lot of planning. It's every one of those, like, little sections of a spin probably has about 10 to 15 different colors in it, and it's fun. It's
It's really impressive. I'm struck already by the fact that you say that you're now tipping over from the point of suspense into the point of action, because for so long, like, you know, I think I've been aware of you kind of from the get-go, and for so long there were just these things, and sometimes it was like the after effect of something, you know, a dozen swords being thrown into a piece of wood or something. But I feel like somewhere down the line, you started moving to these pre-points where it was just like, oh, oh, you know, and for a long time, you've been just like, oh, on the edge of it all.
You're so right. I have shown before, I've shown after, I've done all of that. So why not show that moment, you know, the point where, like, something connects is, it feels like such a simple idea, but it's proving to be kind of difficult.
I wonder whether, and I wasn't really planning on getting so psychoanalytic so soon or whatever, but I wonder if now, like, you've been at the tipping point. Sorry, people, this is going to get a sexual reference. Can't really help it. But you've been, like, edging for so long, and now you're orgasming. Like, now something has clicked in your brain and you've gone, it is all right for me to make all these messes.
To call it a mess after that is, you know, yes.
I was trying to be clean somehow.
You tried. The effort was there. I wonder, I mean, I don't know that there's anything necessarily in my life where it's like, oh yeah, finally I can release. But, it's not for a lack of interest in the before and after moments either. I just wanted to, I don't know, you know, I so fear that that my whole shtick could get stale. And, like, I don't know, you know, like, it's tough because I feel like I've set some guardrails in place for what it is that I do. Like, you are in the fortunate position to speak to exclusively people that work in fibers, but, like, you also know that those people are few and far between in the, like, grander scheme of the art world. And, like, that's fortunately changing. Like, more and more people are making fiber work, and more people are getting acknowledged for that. But it's still, I don't know if you would agree with this, but I my experience is it's still a bit of a novelty.
Yeah.
So being able to have that as, like, something that I can fall back on is, I'm calling it a guardrail for right now. I don't know if that's super fair, but it is. But then the other thing is I'm utilizing imagery that has a fandom. I'm utilizing imagery that has existed for 70, 80 years, and shit, 90 for some of them. And I am, I worry that people look at my work and say, I like this because it looks like it could be Bugs Bunny. And so to be able to take that and, like, you know, already I'm not showing faces. I don't do that. I show hands. I show feet. I show on sometimes just empty rooms. And that's enough of a reference for me. But to show this kind of action and to even further abstract it, I think is in some way for me, like, giving myself an opportunity to go even a little bit further away from that and, like, own one of my guardrails a little bit more. Does that make sense?
It sounds like the artist's journey, though. Do you know what I mean? Oh. I think I'm still fascinated with how you got to this place in the first place. And it is a place that you own, and it's a place that I feel like there'll be a lot of other people who've gone, huh, why did I never think of that? But you own it, so it's kind of fine. So before we go back into psychological mode or whatever, let's go all the way back to young Peter. Hello, young Peter. How did you get into the world of stitching, young Peter?
So I started, well, if it's like all the way back, I'm going to tell an embarrassing story first. Cool. And then I'll tell the real story. But the embarrassing story is I was a little, you know, alternative kid in sophomore year of high school. And I had a home economics class in my seventh grade middle school class. In that class, we were tasked with making certain apparels, pieces of apparel. I made a hooded sweatshirt. And I just kind of really enjoyed the process, and I started to take my alternative, you know, quote-unquote alternative sensibilities, and I just put a bunch of, you know, patches of the fucking bands that I liked on this thing. And so it was just covered in patches. It was the kind of, like, rag that I wore most days for a good year or two even. And one day, I was really, you know, I liked the band Rage Against the Machine, because who didn't? You
exactly.
Should still.
Yeah.
Yep. But I really wanted a patch that showed, like, a symbol that they had of a spray-painted silhouette with a fist raised in the air, because, again, a white middle-class child really felt that, you know? So I couldn't find this patch anywhere. I didn't know that it even existed, so I decided I was going to make it. So I picked up a needle, and I took, unbeknownst to me, the worst possible piece of fabric, a little swatch of leather. Yeah, I Jesus. Thought leather, it's gonna stand the
it's
test of time, this thing.
Well,
yeah. Oh, absolutely. And so I just started, I figured out how to embroider. I never finished it. It was way too difficult. I like was using pliers just to get the needles through, and I bent and broke so many needles just trying to even start this thing. But that was the very first moment where I was like, this is a thing that you can do. And then in college, I went to a school in Chicago called the School of the Art Institute of Chicago. And I was in my first year. And the deal with this school is, I only went to one art school and I did drop out. So, yeah, you could fill a book with what I don't know about art school. But in this school, which could be the case for all of them, there's a core class when you first start. And the core class, what they do is they make sure that you get experience in all parts of art. So chances are you went to art school with the intention of, like I did, I went with the intention of doing painting and drawing. That was what I did. I loved painting. I loved drawing. I wanted to do more of it. And they, at this school, rightfully said, great. It's good to know that in this first year, you're going to have a class, and for, you know, 2 months, you're going to do painting and drawing, but then for 2 months, you're going to do sculptural objects. And that is inclusive of things like, you know, working with clay, going to the wood shop, stitching, things like that. So, yeah. Right. So, then, you know, the section where it's all performance based, and you do sound art, and you do film work, and then, well, anyway. So, I was stitching one day. I was showing an affinity for it or something, and one of my instructors was like, you think very, this was not supposed to be an insult, but she said, you clearly think very two-dimensionally. So, have you ever considered embroidery? Like, you know, seriously. And I hadn't really, but I was like, I'm going to dig into it. I figured out some hand embroidery stuff by myself, and then I found a class with an artist whose name is Daryl Morris. Mm-hmm. Daryl Morris. Do you know him? Do you know his work?
I've heard of him, yeah, for sure.
He's incredible, and such a weird, funny, weird guy. And I took a class with Daryl Morris, and his class was all about humor. It was a fibers class, but it was about employing humor. He made funny work. He made a lot of, like, self-deprecating, you know, he grew up in Kentucky, and for those that don't know anything about the states or about Kentucky specifically, like, you know, you could, he called himself a hick, and that tracked.
Other states may be more metropolitan.
Yeah, I would say, yeah, we would call it rural. It's a little bit more rural, yeah.
The
rural
juror and all that.
Yeah, exactly. So Daryl, he taught, he did embroidery. That was his practice. So I took inspiration from that, of course, and I just figured it out more, and I started enjoying it more, and I spent all of my free time embroidering, and I was just doing tiny little, you know, square swatches of what I would call narrative humorous art. And I, you know, just like, I'm on the train going to class and I'm stitching, and I'm in class and I'm stitching, and I'm at home on the couch and I'm stitching, and I just truly fell in love with it. And then I mean, as far as imagery goes, I've always kind of employed cartoon in different ways. I've really liked when I was doing those hand embroideries, I was definitely focusing more of like a 1970s, like chunky, chubby fingered kind of animation style. Think like, you know, like a Pink Panther type.
I'm getting like Sesame Street cartoon vibes.
It could be, absolutely.
Pinball,
yeah.
Number count, that kind of thing.
Yep, exactly, right. So, you know, that kind of, like, less educational, but certainly.
Yeah. But you know the style of it, isn't it? It's a bit of like course. Robert Crumb kind of direction.
It's a, exactly, yes, absolutely. So that kind of, that feel, and very limp, you know, it's outline. Like, I really wasn't doing very much fill, very much color. So I started there. But, you know, I was also painting at the same time. Like, I was making painted work, and a lot of my painted work was referencing more directly cartoon. Like, this is, well, I guess they both were, but differently. And so, you know, eventually I started making Simpsons paintings. I made a series of Simpsons paintings that were just, well, that, exactly that. And one day what happened is I have a dear friend who told me, have you ever tried doing free motion machine embroidery? And I said, I don't know what that is. Like, I have no concept. My issue was always that embroidery, like hand embroidery, took fucking forever. It takes so long. And I was making art that was about that. I was making a painting that was, you know, I'm sorry, I metric, we don't do it
go
here.
Just go for yeah. it. This is a global podcast.
Perfect.
Four
yeah.
and a half so, fathoms.
Yeah, right. It's like, yeah, like, you know, 4 feet by 5 feet kind of paintings, like, not small, but like, I was making a piece that was, you know, then I would make an embroidery of it, and the painting would take hours, call it 10 hours, and the embroidery could take 10 days. It started being like and the embroidery is this big, you know, and the painting is gigantic, and it's about assigning worth to size in the art world, but I guess anything. And it was that was my own, like, I was just thinking about it. I was interested in the relationship. I, in an ideal world, would have shown the painting and then right next to it shown the embroidery. This was before I was showing art publicly, but that's how I would have done it. My friend told me you should try. I heard of people doing this. Like, he tried it out himself, and I sat down at a machine. I had a sewing machine, of course, because I, you know, young virile male, I have a sewing machine. Yeah. And I, like, you know, Googled how to do the things that I needed to do to make it
drop the
function.
Feed dogs and all that.
Bingo, exactly. And I it just took off. It took off. And it just made sense to me. It made perfect sense to me to be utilizing, cartoon imagery in this medium. I wish I had a better explanation. It just made sense.
No, that's fine. I think that's a good explanation. I remember, like, when I did an interview with Audrey Montoya, who does needle felting, and prior to discovering needle felting, she would do a lot of painted art. It's not a million miles away from the stuff you're talking about, you know, but she puts her own, like, weird slant on things. And then one day she tried needle felting, and she was like, yeah, why didn't I do this? Because suddenly she's making 3D weird, which is just what she wanted to do. I'm also slightly reminded, so I've got a Whippet puppy who's nearly 6 months old, and about 4 weeks ago, he discovered that he can run really bloody fast. Like, and like, he didn't know that because he wasn't big enough, and now all of a sudden he's just like, whoa, and just runs off, and we're like, try and get him back or whatever. But probably not dissimilar for you, do you know what I mean? All of a sudden you're like, oh my sweet Jesus.
It was night and day, and I have since... tried doing hand embroidery. I just hate it. I'm gonna go up close to the computer and see if you can hear it, but my wrist clicks.
Okay.
From embroidery.
Right.
So yeah. I don't need to do that anymore. I have a method that works and works well.
Can you remember the first machine stitched piece that you finished then?
Absolutely, yeah. It was an abstracted piece that when I was first figuring the machine out, I was just making abstract work. I was trying different colors, I was trying layering, I was trying to do, because I could do this with a machine, it was fast enough, I was trying to do something close to stream of consciousness kind of abstraction. Mm-hmm. So I was taking, like, inspiration from things in the room, essentially. Right. So I have some shelving, and I would kind of stitch part of the shelving, and then if something caught my eye in the room, I would shift over to that, and I would make that. And this is not, like, single stitch or anything, but it's as stream of consciousness as I could get feasibly. And so I was making abstract work. It was, I think, mostly pretty successful. I liked a lot of it. But yeah, the first piece that I made, I'll just have to send you a photograph of it.
So I've got some images, because I look back and you contacted me way back. And you sent me a folder of some images of your work. And they're from like 2018. So there's things like checking to see if the mail arrived, sweep it under the rug if you can. And it's interesting because you've got like the early stages of the idea that you now have, the fully filled kind of cartoony ideas. But yeah, at the same time, you're like playing with shapes and there's a lot of empty space. And it's almost like you're plugging things together, almost like it's like improv poetry or something like that.
Certainly, yes. And that's what I was going for. I wanted to... I was painting still at the time, and when I was painting, I was making truly just abstract work, and sometimes that's lines, just, you know, colorful lines, and sometimes it's blocks and shapes and structures, and I was trying to do something similar with embroidery, still marrying the concepts of painted work and embroidered work, and that's what I came up with, yeah.
But also at the same time, I can see that then you're already like exploring, because with machine stitch, well, I mean, with any stitch, I guess, but with machine stitch as well, there's a lot of intention, you know, the deliberacy of where you make the stitches curve and how you can create form and texture and gradation of color and stuff. And it feels like a lot of these were both experimental in terms of concept, but also experimental in terms of technique.
Yes. Yeah, I was absolutely experimenting with technique because I had never done this before. It was, again, totally foreign to me. So, well, not totally, but very foreign to me. Figuring it out, like getting a feel for it. And fortunately, I was able to make some work from that, experimentation that I liked. It stuck with me. I did shift pretty quickly into something a little bit more representational, but that was, I think, inevitable.
Well, that's I needed what it to feels figure like, it out isn't first. It? It's almost like, you know, I watched get back the Peter Jackson 8 hours Beatles making their thing, and you see Paul McCartney working out the song Get Back, and he's just making noises, and then it comes out. And you can see, even in that selection of pieces, you can see that you sent me years ago, it's like, there's some eyes that are like cartoon eyes, and there's a couple of whistles blowing, and you're like, this stuff's like just creeping through. It's unstoppable or something.
This is boring for listeners, but I just sent you the very first piece that I made back in September of 2017. And this, so you'll see that on your Instagram messages.
Okay,
and
I'll find that.
Yeah. It's, again, purely abstract, but like it was definitely me figuring it out, and there's some blending, and there's some like I'm looking at it now, and I can see where I was paying attention to like directional stitching versus, you know, something a little bit more haphazard, and certainly some elements of black work in there, which were probably with an intention of like tidying sections up.
I like that. So that's from 2017. Yeah. And you can already say that, like, because there's a thing I sort of remember, like, I tried to learn roller skating, right? And at first I couldn't do it. And then there's a tipping point when you can't do it as well as you think you ought to be able to do. And it almost feels like you've just come out immediate and gone, oh, this isn't working the way I mean it to.
Absolutely. But I was still happy with the product. Like, I started something, and, like, there was, you could see in this piece, like, a lot of correction that went into it. And then, like, at some point, I probably just, you know, this is remembering a little far back at this point, but I just said, fuck it, you know, like, it's done. And I put it away. And I started another one. And I did a series of these that were, you know, probably, I have to imagine I did like 10 of them before I started doing something more representational. And yeah, that's just where it went.
and then you got your cartoon on, as it were. And then, so when did the idea, like, when did the idea of like the violence or that, because that's the thing that a lot of your work's about, and that's the like, so, you know, I've got a 5-year-old and a 7-year-old now, and we watched some Looney Tunes recently, and I was like, oh my god, they're killing each other.
Absolutely, yes.
But when I was a kid watching it, I was like, this is brilliant, you know. when did that idea of a theme emerge?
You know, I wish that I didn't have to attribute this to Donald Trump, but I absolutely do. Like, I know, yeah. I know, that's the right face to make. back when he was first running in 2016, he still harps on this, of course. He still rings this, you know, bell, this dog whistle. But, he talks about the concept of the past being a better time. And, like, we need to go back to this better time when things were, like, good and wholesome and that kind of... And, you know, of course, this is disregarding the fact that, like, in the, you know, times that he's talking about, the 1950s or whenever the fuck, like... This, you're talking about a broken country and a like a racist a country that is, you know, it is perpetuated today. And the concept of a better time always just kind of irked me. Like, it felt very very selective, and it felt like it was, he's rewriting history. That's all it is. So I've always been a fan of animation and of Looney Tunes specifically. Like, it was something that I grew up with. And so I personally can look back to a different time, not a better time necessarily, but like a different time, when I would be watching Saturday morning cartoons with my father, and I think fondly on those. And these cartoons were, you know, made for adults during wartime. You know, these are cartoons that are reacting to things that are like world wars. They are showing violence, and they are showing racism, and they are showing certainly some like I don't know that they would have called it this at the time, but some toxic masculinity.
Yeah.
And this is just something that like has always been viewed as comedic.
Even like recently, I was watching, I downloaded some Jetsons. I was like, yeah, I remember the Jetsons. And then I'm watching them and I'm just like, oh my God. He just like rocks up at home with his wife there with a cocktail waiting for him, and he sits in his chair and, ah, geez, son. And you're just like, whoa, you just don't see those narratives are just there, aren't they?
Yeah, they really are. And like the like robot maid that is definitely like not white coated, not a white coated robot. So like to be replacing that, oh Jesus, yeah, no, all sorts of issues with these things that that are like hearkened to as like from a better time, like and they just, you know, like this is, and not to criticize the creators of these cartoons, of course they've stood the test of time both for their like, you know, artistry, but also their humor, like they are funny, but like just it's, I think, interesting to explore that a little bit. You know, like, why is this funny? Why is a character trying to kill another character something that is funny? And why is, I mean, even the makers of these cartoons had the wherewithal to, Warner Brothers specifically, to ban some of them. Like, some of them were just too racist for these to exist anywhere. Like, I was responding to that, and it just kind of never stopped.
How much of a student of the cartoons have you become? And I don't just mean, like, looking at them and trying to work them out, but as you were saying, like, the context of them, the people that wrote them, the processes and stuff. Are you pretty, you're a relative expert on the subject, would you say?
Certainly not an expert, but I've done a good amount of probably more than just your casual Saturday morning watcher. Yeah, sure. Like, I know some of the, like, you know, I know that my favorite background artist, his name is Holly Pratt. Like, if I'm looking for a good background, I will look for a Holly Pratt background. Like, right. That's, yeah, yeah. So, you know, this is the kind of expertise I've got. It's mostly what my preferences are.
Because I would imagine, and this loops back nicely to the spin at the start.
Very good.
I feel like you're looking at these images, and they're, I guess, painted cells, aren't they? Back in the day, that was how that animation would have been done, right?
So certainly, yeah.
So I guess you're getting to appreciate the artistry in those relatively simple things that we only see for a split second, but like then, and then trying to translate that into a different medium must give you an appreciation for the fundamental artistry in the first place.
Absolutely, yes. I mean, this is, like, cartoon is funny because it's created with such a care and such artistry, and you're doing these things, like, each one of these characters is drawn thousands of times per episode. And these are 7-minute episodes, you know? So, like, you have to love these characters, and you have to love the animation style in order to actually just do that. But then, yeah, there's, like, some episodes are truly just gorgeous. This is not to say that it was created as art. Like, it was created, like, it is art, no question, but it was created with a different purpose. Like, again, some, like, this is adult entertainment, is what the ultimate purpose was. And to be shown alongside newsreels, to be shown, like, you're trying to find out what's going on in Korea in the 50s, and you're seeing an episode of Bugs Bunny, you know, getting shot at before that, and it, like, that's just, it's all part of it. So yeah, certainly though, the craftsmanship that goes into animation work, period, is nuts. I've done a small handful of embroidered animations that, and that by itself is enough to convince me that I will never work in animation. They don't do it in the same way anymore, but I can't imagine. I truly can't sitting and drawing the changes in limbs for hours a day.
Is it the Spider-Man, the one with Miles Morales, the animated Spider-Man that was, the first one, not the second one, forgive me for not knowing the name, but epic, absolutely love the animation, but they did some really clever things, like in the distance, they would just have blobs and they would allow your imagination to assume that was traffic in the distance or whatever. Did you come across any like shortcuts like that that the old school animators would do?
Yeah, of course. In the so, if we're talking about different like eras in the golden era of animation, there were a number of different styles that went into play, and it changed kind of with culture, which is great, and of course it does. But there was a point from post World War II, going into the 50s and especially into the 60s, where there was a lot of detail that was dropped from especially the backgrounds of these shows. You start seeing just like hard outlines with like color blobs behind these hard outlines, and I think especially about there's one cartoon character that I've taken a lot from, and her name is Witch Hazel. She's one of the few female characters in all of Looney Tunes, and she's the witch. She is the kind of Hagrid, like trying to make Bugs Bunny into a stew kind of witch character. I took a lot from her. She did this thing where, like, if she would rush out of a room, either, like, on a broomstick or just running, every time she would rush out of a room, there would be, like, a small puff of smoke, like, showing her, like, running away, and her little, like, hairpins would fly out of her hair and just kind of spin in place, and I loved those hairpins. I just loved them. I thought they were such an interesting way to show, like, mania and action mm-hmm. pretty much. So I used a lot of those, but she was from, her character is from an era where all of the backgrounds are really kind of like color blob, and then drawings on top of that, just simple line drawings that are like implying a room more than anything.
Yeah.
So yes, going from very detailed, like painted, organic looking backgrounds to something that is way more abstract happened over the course of a couple of years.
Right, that's interesting. It's making me think of the Aristocats, which was like, that was from 1970, but it was of that sort of 60s and big rectangles of colour. And the illustration's fine because it's a Disney film, isn't it? And it's all like fancy architecture and stuff. But that same kind of thing, it feels a bit jazz. It feels a bit like...
Jazz is a great word for it. It's a great word for it because, yeah, it does... It like feels very like... Like, I definitely ascribe it more to the 60s, I guess. I don't know why. Mm. But, you kind of feel like a hi-hat when you look at that. And, like, you see a lot of starbursts in those cartoons, which, especially in, like, the intros. Like,
Can they call it Atomic Diner or something like that? Isn't that a bit of a phrase for
That certainly could be. But yeah, like it's that 1950s, absolutely. It's cute. It's fun. Yeah.
Mm. So Witch Hazel notwithstanding, do you have any other like characters that have really had an impact on you?
Yeah, I did a lot with Sylvester. I thought Sylvester the cat was a really pathetic character. And I really responded well to Sylvester. I thought that, he's just hungry. That's all it is. He's doing what it, like, is natural to him. I also have cats, so that, it helps. But Yeah, Sylvester, I think I respond really well to the pathetic ones. And more than that, just the characters that are doing the hunting. Mm-hmm. So, like Yosemite Sam is a character mm-hmm. that I love. Elmer Fudd is a character that I love.
Wile E. Coyote?
Certainly, yep. I've worked a lot with... You know what I like about Wile E. Coyote and, Roadrunner cartoons? Is they are so formulaic. Like, you know what you're gonna get out of those. And if you're looking for some sort of, like truly violent action, you go to one of those cartoons. Yeah. Funny enough... Characters that I hate, Taz, hate him. It's one dimensional. Like, there's nothing. It's mindless. It's mindless, and there's just, you know, when your motivation is mindless, I just have a hard time taking anything from it, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. I guess a lot of the other ones, and I lean towards. Wile E. Coyote, Sylvester, because it's almost like they had these brilliant ideas. I got a brilliant idea of a way to catch you. I can't believe it's fundamentally gone wrong. But the idea is, I'm going to ship a thing in from Acme. It's going to be a massive firework. What could possibly go wrong?
Exactly. Rocket shoes. Like, it makes the most sense in the world. Like, I'm going to move so fast, I will finally catch... what I've been trying to catch. Yeah, rocket shoes. Absolutely. Giant slingshot. No question. Yeah.
Yeah, what could go wrong? There's no risk assessment in those ideas at all.
I do love that. It's the kind of best laid plans. You don't there's just not a plan in those cartoons that goes correctly. Mm. Every single plan goes wrong. And there's just something very human about that, I guess.
Thanks for joining me on another Needle Exchange. I hope you enjoyed the show. I'd love to hear from you, so feel free to email hello@needle.exchange, that's NWDL.exchange, with any thoughts, comments, or feedback. And if you want to keep up with all the news, sign up to the Needle Exchange mailing list at bit.ly/needleexchange. See you next time.